Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast. What you eat and you are. What you eat, eat. And you're even what you eat, eat, eat. Here's a clue, why don't you take a peek beneath your feet? My name's Anne Stanley, and today my guest is Guy Palmer. Guy is the creator and publisher of the Local Food Connect website, which many listeners to the show read and even contribute to. So you might be interested to hear from the webmaster himself, who's sitting just across from me here. If you know the website, you'll know that the aim is to connect people with local food sources, including farmers markets and other events. And as the person who built and maintains the site, Guy has a unique understanding of the scope of local food production in the northeast Melbourne region. So, you know, based on the data, the connections he's made and the insights that he's gathered over time, we're just going to chat a little bit about the scope of local food production in northeast Melbourne. And just to get a size of the movement that many of us feel that we are a part of. So welcome, Guy.
Well, hi.
It's lovely to have you here today.
And you.
So for those who haven't visited the Local Food Connect website, or who have but haven't looked at the whole scope of it, can you just walk us through it, what it's like?
Okay, so the Local Food Connect website, which is localfoodconnect.org.au, aims to cover all matters food in the area of northeast Melbourne, loosely northeast Melbourne. Obviously, lots of the issues in northeast Melbourne are common across Melbourne and Victoria and so on and so forth. So it has a readership which is wider than just the local people. It's a website which tries to cover all aspects. So it covers upcoming events, it covers local food producers, local community gardens, food swaps, the whole food justice thing, which is very active around here, and has lots of articles about how to grow various things and how to look after your fruit and veg.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about which of those sections seems to attract the most traffic.
The most traffic is most people find websites by going via Google searches. It's individual pages attract the most traffic. So like the material on pumpkins happens to be one of the most popular pages. but by far the most popular page is the veggie planting guide, which talks about what you can plant when and how far spaced it should be apart and when you should harvest it and so on and so mm-hmm. forth.
And that's a very comprehensive planting guide, isn't it? Because you've even got moon planting, which phase of the moon to plant in, yeah. and stuff. Is that something you yourself follow, or is it just for those interested in that?
So moon phase planting is the idea that you should plant root vegetables when the moon is waning, and you should plant leafy greens and things when the moon is waxing. The main thing I think it gives practically to home growers is it just provides something of a calendar and something of a discipline. So you know you're meant to plant your peas and beans or whatever in particular weeks of the year, so you discipline yourself to do that, and you punish yourself if you miss that week. You punish yourself by not planting those things for a month.
So we often talk on this show about the different approaches to gardening based on personality type, I think it is, and mine is ill-disciplined,
yes,
and minimal punishing. I'm not saying I'm immune from the punishing, because I have seen the odd punnet that I've planted and not watered and got annoyed with myself. But basically my garden thrives on me chucking seeds into it and compost and watering it and yes. hoping nature helps out and stuff. I know that you are much more disciplined with yours. T- Just to diverge a little bit,
yeah.
Can you talk about what things grow really well and what things do you have a bit of trouble with, even though you follow the instructions?
So I live in Eltham, and Eltham has clay soil, so you can't really grow vegetables in the soil itself, so you have to have raised beds. So your raised beds, therefore, have quite good quality soil. And obviously you have to irrigate them in one way or another. And I think you then end up with, you can grow most things in Melbourne. Actually, most vegetables grow fine. If you were to ask me what the easiest ones are, I'd say broad beans are really easy in winter. Tomatoes are easy in summer and obviously pretty yummy as well. Pumpkins nearly always grow successfully. All the leafy greens are easy.
Mm, yeah.
I mean, the most difficult group by quite a long way is the brassicas.
Yes, yeah.
Because they're infested by one pest or another, and also because they quite often fail to produce what they're meant to produce.
They bolt to seed or something. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So what you're saying, Guy, is if you really are disciplined and do it properly, you can manage to grow anything.
You can grow most veggies and most fruit trees in Melbourne. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, back to the website. So yeah. Can you be really specific? Is it five basic databases you've got on that? Can you just talk about specifically about each one in a little bit of detail?
So we have a calendar of events and of local food events, and that calendar has about 400 events per month, or about 5,000 per year, which I think shows the scale of activity that goes on in northeast Melbourne, because they're all local events. And that calendar allows you to book your place at any of the events and gives the details. We have a database of community gardens. There are about 70 community gardens in northeast Melbourne. Each community garden is a community in its own right. We might talk a bit more about that. We have a database of food swaps, where people deposit and take away food as they wish. And there's about 30 food swaps, which means that about half of the suburbs in northeast Melbourne have a food swap. Mm. And we have a food justice database, which it has about 50 organisations in it, and they are of various types. But in each case, the organisation is trying to provide food for people who are disadvantaged in one way or another.
Mm-hmm. So that's the extent of it. That's on. Oh, yeah. You've also got a lot of people.
Sorry.
Talk about the newsletter.
accompanying the website is a newsletter. It's a weekly newsletter. It goes out on a Wednesday morning, and whenever it looks forward a month, so or 6 weeks, so it will have all the events that are coming up in the next 6 weeks with relevant links and so forth. And it has articles on how to grow this, that and the other, or about this local food producer, or about this piece of news, mm-hmm. or whatever. It has a circulation of about 4,500. The website, by the way, gets about 1,000 people a day.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and how many people do you have contributing to it? Because you're not doing it all on your own, I presume.
So I've been doing the website and the newsletter now for about a decade. Over that decade, we have had getting on for 1,000 people contribute something or other. We have at any one time about like 10 regular contributors, and they come and go because we're all volunteers and we've all got other things to do in life. I interact with quite a lot of these people, and a lot of the events, the reason that I know about them is because someone's written to me or rang me up to tell me about them.
Mm-hmm. So anybody can call, get in touch with you.
Yeah.
Through the website, so localfoodconnect.org.au, we'll have your contact details.
Has both my phone number and my email address.
Yes. Now, northeast Melbourne, just give us, is it just like a triangle there going from like Essendon and then down to, through Eltham out to where?
So it's a quadrangle. So it's a quarter of the whole circle of Melbourne, where the westmost vertical line goes through the city, and the southmost mm-hmm. horizontal line goes through the city. Mm-hmm. It literally is that quadrangle. I mean, the reason for choosing that is because I live in Eltham. Eltham is right on the edge of Nulambik, and at the other edge of Nulambik is King Lake. And King Lake is about the same distance from Eltham as the centre of Melbourne is. So I thought, well, if we're doing King Lake, we also ought to go into the centre of mm-hmm. Melbourne. And then, so I gradually expanded the area that one was trying to cover. And then I sort of ran out of capacity when I reached the centre of Melbourne.
Okay. All right.
It would be good if there were three other local food connects who did the other quadrangles.
There's probably the same number of things going on.
Absolutely.
It's just that they haven't got someone that's got the overview of them. So that, you know, if there's 5,000 events just in northeast Melbourne, is that at a time? Is that what you're saying?
No, over the year.
Over the year. Over the year. 5,000 events, then they would be 20,000, possibly 20,000 similar events in the whole of Melbourne. So that is pretty amazing. To what extent would you publicise an event that wasn't within that quadrant or quadrangle, whatever you mathematicians call it?
The answer is there is a section in the newsletter which is not local but interesting. And the basic rule there is that if someone takes the trouble to write to me, then I will reward them, so to speak, by putting them in the newsletter.
Right. Okay. All right. Now, what else can I ask you? Has it changed a lot in that decade? Has anything changed in that decade that you've noticed through working with the website?
It's sort of difficult to know, in the sense that when I started, I knew nothing. So my knowledge has changed over the decade. I think there are certain aspects of the local food movement which have become more vibrant over that decade. I think the obvious example is food justice, which is a subject all on its own, which we probably haven't got time to talk about today. But there were all sorts of organisations who, in one way or another, are giving away food. And community gardens, I think, have also developed quite a lot. If you go back 50 years, most community gardens were allotments. But nowadays, most community gardens are communal. And not only are they communal by definition, but they're communal in nature. They are more about a group of people getting together for social reasons rather than serious food growing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, the serious end of it's the food justice end of it. And we know that more and more people are struggling to make ends meet with
yes.
food. Tell us about the Mitcham Community Meal, because I know that it's something that we both admire. What do you admire about it, or what do you know about it?
Well, I know that it no longer happens.
Oh,
so
what?
The last meal was in December 2024.
Oh, so people got exhausted?
The people organising it just decided that they'd done it for long enough.
Uh-huh.
And they announced, I think early in December, they were going to finish at the end of the year, and they did.
Ah, okay.
I think that illustrates an important point about volunteering and community activity, but particularly in the food space, which is that it does all depend on individuals.
It does, yeah.
So, you know, the most active community gardens are the ones where they have a core group who keep it going and encourage other people to get involved and so on and so forth. And the dormant ones are ones where that core group, for one reason mm-hmm. or another, has moved on.
Or that personality's not there, that individual. Yeah. So do you have a sense of what's going on with food justice organisations in general? Is there a trend? One trend I've noticed is that the supermarkets are on board. So there's less dumpster diving and more the supermarket facilitating the collection of stuff.
Well, so there are some very big food rescue organisations. I mean, Second Bite is a notable one. They're based in Heidelberg. And Second Bite get most of their food from Coles. And they get their food, which is like coming up to its use-by date, a lot of it. And then they channel it via small voluntary organisations to lots of people around Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
The Food Bank, which I think is based in Footscray, is an enormous outfit. There's where they do the same sort of thing. Then there's an organisation called Fair Share, who are based at Abbotsford. And what Fair Share do is they make meals made out of rescue food, and they mainly give those meals to the food bank, who then give it to the smaller.
But they also grow food, so
yeah, they do.
So that that wasteland near Victoria Park Station,
yes,
they've reclaimed all that land and built up the soil, which was underneath is contaminated,
yes,
obviously. So they've built up the soil there, and they've got quite a lot of food production there. And they've got another place down in Clayton.
Yeah, and I think they've got a third farm as well.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So they've got basically small market gardens.
Yes.
So they're actually rescuing food but also growing food.
Yes.
So that's interesting. And that's growing then, is it? If they've got three farms now.
They've got three farms. They grow quite a lot. And then they have a kitchen which uses that food and other rescued food.
Yeah.
And the kitchen is based in Abbotsford. And if you ever get the opportunity to be shown around it, which they sometimes
yes.
do, it's really interesting. It's a really sort of professional,
yeah.
large-scale organisation run almost in, not run by volunteers, but all the work is done by volunteers.
Yeah.
Mostly
and
young,
that's
younger people from the CBD.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Well, I actually toured the one in Clayton.
Okay.
And, all volunteers. And a little bit of philanthropy in there too. I think there's a benefactor down there that
yeah.
possibly gave them the land or something. So, So I suppose with the community gardens, you say you need this one personality. But with these things, it sounds like they're setting up structures that might carry it through.
Yeah, I think.
Do they because they must employ...
Yeah,
management.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I think, there were small-scale organisations and there were large-scale organisations.
Yes.
And I think the large-scale organisations only become large-scale because some fortuitous event happens to them, which allows it. And that quite often is philanthropy
mm-hmm.
in one way or another.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll have a little break and we'll be right back.
Okay.
When I was new to Melbourne, I found a Food Not Bombs flyer on the road, and I had like this feast with a carrot, and carrots are my favourite vegetable. Yeah, I think they were asking for help doing stuff, and I got in touch.
We, I guess, rescue food
that would otherwise go to waste.
I like the aspect of sharing food and not making anyone feel obligated to pay anything for it.
We make a real point at Food Not Bombs of involving everyone who wants to be involved in whichever part they want to be involved in.
For more information, go to fnbmelb.noblogs.org. Food Not Bombs is a 3CR supporter.
The new Climate Action radio show will surprise you.
Well, first of all, I'm not a believer in global warming. I'm not a believer in man-made global warming.
And so you'll hear voices from all around Australia and overseas that are taking all types of climate action, whether it's stopping coal and gas, whether it's building a new model of society, or whether it's just sustaining you in the grief you may feel about the climate destruction we're facing. And in that spirit, here's a poem by Rumi. Stop, take a breath, for you are drunk, and we are at the edge of the roof.
This is coal. Don't be afraid. Don't be scared. It's coal. It's coal. It's coal.
Tune in every Monday at 5 p.m. to hear the Climate Action Radio Show.
This is a Local Food Connection show on 3CR 855 kHz on your AM radio dial and 3CR on digital radio. You can also visit the 3CR website and listen to the live streaming of the show. Remember also we've got well over 100 podcasts that you can go back and listen to at your leisure. Today I'm chatting with Guy Palmer about the scope of local food production in the northeast of Melbourne, and we're also extrapolating a little to, multiply that by four just to get a sense of the scope of the whole thing in the whole of Melbourne. So understanding the scope of the local food movement in a region is important, I think, because it reveals how communities are addressing food security, sustainability, and economic resilience. Guy, I know that that's your main focus isn't about sustainability, or is it? And I don't think it's necessarily about economic resilience. To what extent, though, do you think... Well, actually, let's just talk about what do you think communities are addressing through this?
Okay.
What in terms of who you've met, you know, what are they preoccupied with?
Can I start by answering a different question, which is one of the databases I didn't talk about is the database of local food makers and producers.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a number of farms, for example, in northeast Melbourne. And there are a number of farmers' markets, and there are a number of other outlets for locally grown food. So there's a database of 140 local food makers. I think there's all sorts of different reasons why people are interested in local food, and different people will have different priorities. But if I had to say what are the most common things, I would say that there are two most common things. One is that most of the people I interact with are actually interested in growing food, both fruit and veggies. They're interested in where food comes from and how it's grown and how you manage it and so on and so forth. And the other, I think, popular theme is I think most people are interested in local community. So... the reason they read the newsletter is because they're sort of interested in what other people are doing. The reason they're part of a community garden quite often is because they want to interact with people of like minds and so forth. And then over and above that, there are all sorts of aspects of food that you can prioritise. And I'm happy to talk about which ones I prioritise if you want, but I've got a list here, which mm-hmm. I wrote down.
Mm-hmm.
Food sovereignty, food insecurity, certified organic food, respect for animals, unusual food, eating locally grown food, saving money, and eating fresh food, and eating heirloom varieties.
Ah, there's a lot there.
So there's a lot, yeah.
It's a lot.
And you can't believe in them all because some of them push in different directions.
Some of them might be contradictory or whatever. Okay, let's talk about your own priorities just out of interest, since you're the one we've got here in the studio.
Okay, so... I originally got into this whole thing really as a joint hobby with my wife. We had very different hobbies, but we happened to both be potentially interested in this subject. And therefore, I got involved in the movement via an extension of that. The logical thing was to start going to food swaps and to become involved in community gardens and so on and so forth.
I want to take you back a bit. Mm-hmm. Why not just take up tennis with your wife or bridge? So, you know, why? So that doesn't get to the bottom of why food, why you're interested in food growing.
Oh.
Both of you.
Well, I do play tennis and play bridge. My wife does neither. So that answers those two. It just happened to be a subject which was of interest to both of us. When I was younger, I lived in central London. In central London, you don't have gardens, and therefore you, whatever. I came to Australia, and I suddenly found there was all this land, and therefore got interested in gardening generally and food growing in particular.
I'm going to push you on this.
Okay.
And
then when I got into it,
okay.
I found it was interesting.
So is an intellectual interest for you? I know that you're interested in evolution and science and all that. So is it kind of you're interested in biology and botany?
Well, it's interesting in a very simple level, which is like if you want to grow broad beans, you grow them over winter. But if you want to grow beans, you grow them over summer. And therefore, to be a successful gardener, you need to know that and to grow things at an appropriate time. And yet the two things are very similar. So why is one winter, one summer? I don't, you know, it's interesting.
So you just enjoy the curiosity about
knowledge,
that. Yeah.
And then, you know, like I decided one year to grow peanuts. Now, your average person probably doesn't know what a peanut plant looks like. But the peanut plant is about, it only grows like 30, 40 centimetres high. And although the peanuts come from flowers, they grow just under the ground. And the what happens is the flower gets fertilised and a small peanut appears. And the peanut, just by force of gravity, bends the stalk down until the peanut hits the ground. Mm-hmm. And then it buries itself just underneath. And then when you're ready for, you can't see the peanuts at all. And then when you pull up a peanut plant, you can have either naught peanuts or a million peanuts.
So like,
and you don't know until you pull the thing
sort
up.
So like potatoes all growing out of the one root spring.
Yeah, yeah. Ah. It's like if you pull them up, it's just like a sea of peanuts if you grow it successfully.
So, I mean, so every garden's got millions of fun little things like that going on, and that's what keeps you going out there every day to check it out and
You know, the whole area of bush foods is something that I discovered, and we grow quite a lot of bush foods, and they have interesting tastes, and there are some where you can't imagine why anyone ever ate them in the first place. And there are some that become part of my normal diet.
Mm-hmm.
I've recently got more into growing sort of Asian-type greens.
What type greens?
Asian
greens, yes.
Partly because some of the contributors to the newsletter are Asian. And that's also been interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you grow snake beans, and snake beans,
mm-hmm.
you eat them instead of normal beans, but they are roughly like 40 centimetres long.
Size of a snake.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, we've only got three more minutes.
Okay.
So I'm going to go through your dot points there, and you're going to go yes, no.
Okay.
And when you say a yes, I'm going to get you to elaborate. So all the reasons for why people grow food. So you said you just like growing food because you enjoy so much the knowledge that comes from doing it. Are you concerned about where your food comes from, yes or no? Is that something that you contributes to your interest?
Yes, I am.
Mm-hmm.
I think food sovereignty and food insecurity are real issues, but I'm not sure that I'm doing much to solve them.
No, but at least if post-apocalypse, you might survive for a couple of weeks the garden.
We aim to be self-sufficient as a family.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay, so that's where food comes from. Are you interested in heirloom varieties for any reason?
Yeah, I think that is interesting. I think if you take tomatoes, for example, there are a million different varieties of tomatoes. They have different tastes. They look different. And growing different tomatoes each year is an interesting exercise. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's also a sort of a service to humanity in any way to make sure we preserve these old seeds?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think on our website we might list maybe 5,000 different varieties of tomato. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were just the most enormous number.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously in normal shops you're getting a very small subset mm-hmm. of that mm-hmm. variety.
And I'm noticing a lot of new apple varieties coming out with fancy names, and some of them are great and some of them have got no taste whatsoever.
Yeah.
So it's back to organic apples for me.
Yes.
The apples are atrocious. All right, what's about animals? Are you concerned about animal welfare? And
yes, I am. We have a no-kill policy in our garden. And that certainly includes insects. We mainly eat certified organic food. And certified organic food actually has lots of rules and regulations about the welfare of animals in it, as well as no spraying and so forth. So that would be one of our important sets of criteria.
Mm-hmm. You're not vegetarian, though?
I am vegetarian.
Oh, you are vegetarian.
Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. What else? Eating local obviously seems to be important. For why?
Yes, it is important, but it does conflict a bit with certified organic.
Mm-hmm.
because one of the problems with the certified organic process is that you have to, it actually takes quite a bit of effort to become certified, and most of the local food growers are small organisations. So the way around that issue, I think, is to get to know the local food growers and only buy from those who have a philosophy which is in line with your philosophy.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. We have to go because we've only got half an hour, and we basically covered what we wanted to cover. So, folks, that's the scope of local food growing, and that's the insight into Guy Palmer's brain there about it.
Thank you very much.
Okay, congratulations on having a great website and newsletter. And hopefully knowing the reach and impact of local food systems will help people who are looking for information, who want to guide policy or support local farmers or reduce environmental footprints. If you want to find out more about Guy's work, go to localfoodconnect.org.au. Until next week, love the land you're on, share your surplus and take care of each other. Stay tuned now to 3CR for more Radical Radio with Latin American Update. Bye for now.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.